talking trees with ISA certified arborist John Eisenhower of Integrity Tree Service. You can join the conversation at 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888.
Do you hear all those falling leaves?
Rosy for you. Is that what that's supposed to be?
That's what we're
Got it. I was trying to figure out that tie-in. Falling leaves. Nice job, Gary.
Yeah, falling
Wake
leaves.
Wake up!
They're a beautiful thing.
That was a huge hit in 1957, Roger Williams. Huge hit. I'm serious.
It was. That's right. I remember that. Yes, sir. That's dating me. But I was.
Well, I won't rub it in that I wasn't born yet then. So we'll move on to our trees. You have an entire list of notes here. I could see that. How far down that are we? Have we even scratched the surface on that?
We're just getting started. I did want to mention holiday lights this time of year. If you do plan to put up holiday lights, a couple of tips. Don't use nails or staples or wire or anything else that's going to damage the tree itself. Those wounds can be entry points for disease, pathogens, insects, and also they just destroy the ability for the tree to uptake water and nutrients if you're damaging the cambium. So be real careful. We recommend using gardening tape or twine. It's a lot easier on the tree. And also try to remove the lights. Probably the worst damage that holiday lights create is when people leave them on for multiple seasons.
Acts like a boa constrictor on your
exactly. Yeah.
Trunk
then
or limbs.
As those limbs get larger in diameter, those lights will start to girdle around the branches and cause some real serious problems with the trees. So best to take them down every year. I know it's a lot of work to put them back up, but if you choose to leave them on multiple years, you ought to wrap them very loosely around the branches to allow the tree to grow.
I like the people that just take a light bulb and shine it on the tree. So you got a red tree here and a green tree there and a blue tree here. And you don't have to worry about going and stringing. When I saw that, I thought, gosh, that's brilliant. And then you can do your colored strings on your house. That's easier to put on and remove instead of trying to wrap them in through your trees. I thought that's brilliant.
Yeah, these lights, they are a dramatic effect in the yard and beautiful. People love to put them up. Nowadays, a lot of people are going to the lasers too, which is kind of a cheat, you know, where they get the little laser lights that throw those little flickers of light all up underneath your tree canopy and they move around. And those are pretty cool. Are you familiar with those?
I'm trying to visualize that. I can't.
Yeah, just the last year or so, people are really using those. And then you don't have to touch the trees at all, but you can use them as a dramatic backdrop to this
nice.
Kind of a light show underneath. And I might be kind of heading that direction because it's I've seen some really neat ones that are pretty beautiful. If you've got a nice tree canopy, those lights will be dancing off of all those branches. I wanted to talk a little bit about pruning. Just remember that this time of year, as the temperatures are dropping, your pruning should be dropping as well. The amount, that is the percentage of foliage that you're removing from your plants, should decrease as the temperatures are decreasing. So you can do a little bit of light grooming this time of year. Some of your more vigorous trees, like your mesquites that you prune back in May and June, they might just be screaming for a little attention right now because they grow so fast. And with this, mild temperatures that we've had, trees just continue to grow here in Arizona. We don't have a real dormancy where things shut down in September. And, you know, like this week, 87 degrees. The growing season and the soil temperatures are nice and warm. They continue right through till, this time of year. So you can do a little bit of light pruning, some end weight reduction on your mesquite trees. Try to kind of keep them, tie them over until their annual pruning cycle again next May and June. So they might need a little bit of mid-year attention. But other than that, be real careful, especially your frost-sensitive trees. Be careful not to be taking their winter coat off. Our flowering trees and shrubs need to just be left alone right now. And because if we do get some frost damage, you don't want to have just removed the outer foliage because they'll freeze even deeper into the larger wood inside the plant. So if you leave them nice and full this time of year and they get a little bit of frost damage, the frost damage will occur out on the outer parts of the tree or shrub, and you can trim that off safely in the spring and still have a plant left. But if you trim them back too heavily, they could be really severely damaged in a frost.
And we may not get that frost on the desert floor this winter. We didn't get one last year. My citrus grew all year long. It's like I had two different growth cycles. My Anna apples never lost their leaves. We didn't get any peaches because there wasn't enough chill hours. But usually what that means after 2 or 3 years of that, then we get that hard snap and catches everyone else off guard. Pipes are busted and we're cutting them back down to the root stock on our lemon trees because they everything's frozen.
Yeah, we had that really hard frost in 2007, another one in 2011, but we really haven't had a bad one since then. Yeah, probably are. It usually cycles through every several 4 or 5 years. So, yeah, we are due. Hopefully it's not too severe. But like I said, if your plants are allowed to grow a little more luxuriantly now, you will have prepared them for that possible heavy frost. So keep them nice and full if you can.
1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you. As we get to Margaret, who wants to talk about Italian cypress. Welcome to the program.
Hi. Yes, I have some four Italian cypress, but I have these brown spots, you know. So I don't know what to do. I wonder if it those kind of a mite.
Yeah, Italian cypress are pretty well adapted to our climate, and a lot of people like to grow them, but they are susceptible to spider mites.
Spider mites.
Yeah, you do need to get them looked at by a qualified pest control applicator, someone who can come in and diagnose that and spray treat them chemically. It's really the best way to control them. You can also help the plants by just dosing them with a really good, strong stream of water that can just bust up the party, so to speak, because those spider mites will get in and create these little webs. And if you can get in there and spray depending on how tall they are, with smaller ones, we can hit them with a nice, you know, strong spray of water. And that can sometimes give you the control that you need without going to chemicals. But if you have a larger plant, you know, you might need to get with a qualified pest control company.
And Italian cypress are used in a lot of areas where you may not have room for a big canopy, but you're looking for some kind of tree. They're the ones that just grow straight up. And they
straight
look
up.
You see them in...
Yeah.
In every cemetery across the entire state. If you want to know what Italian cypress is, just pay attention when you cross a cemetery. And a lot of times they're cut to have a flat top. Very strange, like Mediterranean look. But that's one of those things like palm trees. It wouldn't hurt my feelings if they all just disappeared.
they can be pretty temperamental. They're difficult to manage sometimes. The branches will splay out, and then they're hard to contain. People want to wrap them up to kind of, keep those branches from growing outward. And then you've got the difficulty of having to maintain them in that bundled shape for the rest of their lives. And, it's tough to maintain them sometimes.
Eric's next on the line, calling in from Buckeye. Welcome to the program, sir.
Good morning.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I have a question about fruit trees, you know, especially the plums and nectarine, you know, this kind of trees. I buy them, and in the beginning of the fall, they start growing vigorously, and when the summer hits, they start flowering, and then as the temperature go higher, the leaves start falling, the flower fall, and by the end of the summer, they just completely dead. That happened to me almost 4 seasons in a row.
Yeah, I'm sorry to hear that. I don't know what your cultural conditions are, and sometimes there could be an issue with overwatering. I know when the summer comes along, it's a tendency to want to be sure that they're making it through. And when they start to get a little bit of a leaf burn, then people want to water to make sure that they are compensating for that. But then they end up overwatering. And then that sets up conditions for fungal pathogens to get active. And it's a real typical cycle. I'm not sure that's what's happening in your case, but you know, when I hear you say that they start languishing in the summer and then they go dead. When plants die in the summer and you know it's not due to underwatering, quite often it's due to overwatering. So Best of luck with you too. If you need to get a certified arborist to come out and kind of analyze your soil conditions, we could do a soil analysis, send it in for a laboratory, and determine if there's maybe some pathogens in the soil. Occasionally, there are fungal pathogens that are active in the soil, and if you keep planting trees back into those same spots, they will, as soon as the roots grow outside of the planting container mix into the native soil, then they contract the disease and die. And we've had, you know, similar situations where a customer of ours will put in trees multiple times to have the same end, and the trees continue to die. And we found out that it's a pathogen in the soil, and you need to put a non-susceptible tree species into that location so that you can at least have a plant in that spot.
And you do a lot of coaching and classes and training. I know Greg Peterson, our urban farmer, that you've gotten a lot of yours from. He does his fruit tree seminars. I know you're out, sure, in Buckeye, but you can do that online, or you can come into Central Phoenix where his urban farm is and sign up for one of his classes. He'll walk you through that. He really has a heart and wants to see people be successful. And I don't know the size of the trees you're messing with, but man, I know it doesn't give you the instant gratification, but I'm a big fan of going from rootstock or 5 gallons, because you're then starting the tree small, and for the majority of its life, it gets acclimated at a very young age, instead of putting in this big, huge box tree that, you know, all of a sudden you're dropping in this native soil, and it's kind of like a shock. You almost seems like as many years it was in that container is as many years as it takes to adapt to a transplant. And I like the small and the rootstock for starters.
Yeah, if you can, if you've got the time to coach them through a few those earlier years, there it's really really rewarding. And yeah, they sometimes those ones that have gotten established in that area as a young tree, they have a long healthy life, as opposed to containerized trees that are larger, who might have a little harder time transitioning.
And not to say you can't make that work. I just, if you have the time, that's a personal preference there.
Yes. Well, we have a, I wanted to mention before we, and we can continue this in the next segment, I wanted to talk a little bit about the reasons why I'm thankful for trees. Being that this is a Thanksgiving week coming up next week, I just am so grateful for trees. It not only has provided a livelihood for my family, but, you know, ever since I was a kid, I have loved trees, and there's a lot of good reasons why.
Okay, well, we will save those for the last segment here at Rosie on the House. We'll jump out a few seconds early and give you a few seconds to expound on that on the final segment here in the Talking Trees Hour at Rosie on the House.